Hello and welcome to Emigo Radio 4.11. I can't hear myself.
You can't hear yourself at all?
No, I can't hear myself at all.
Interesting. How about now?
That's a little bit better. Yeah, why don't you turn it up so that people can hear us?
Oh, well, you know, people don't really like us that
much. Okay, so. Yes, that's much better. Thank you. Welcome to some point something about something.
4.11. Yeah, Emigo Radio.
We're live from the Vaux store on Main Street. It is Black Friday. So come down here and consume like the animals you are.
I got a beer, too.
Yes, there's one beer.
This is my tradition. I pick up a beer somewhere during the season.
So if you come down here and the beer is still here, you can treat yourself to some of the finest ice house in America.
It's great stuff.
You have one 12-ounce bottle of ice house. It is a party.
Well, we didn't go to many places this year, so I had to get East Lansing beer.
I see. Yeah. So, one last look back at the Indiana game before we move on to a rather large thing this weekend.
Kind of a game. Can I be, like, little screaming panicky guy? The little...
Have you ever not been?
Yes. Okay. I'm not the panicky person, okay. But... This game was a little, given it was the game before the game, which needs a name, by the way. We need a better name than the game before the game every year.
The penulta game.
Penulta game. Whatever. That's it. Yeah, so I had questions.
Okay.
And the first one, I'm not even to bother with the first one. We already went over the end of the half.
Okay, yeah, the end of the half was a bad thing that shouldn't happen.
Okay, was there anything, when...
I didn't like it.
Right. We got through that one already. All right. Number two, Rashawn Gary is getting moved by a tight end.
Yeah, that happened a couple times because he wasn't expecting it, and then as soon as he expected it, he ran over the dude.
Right. So he got it fixed, so he was kind of getting blindsided.
Right. You know, it was just like, oh, I didn't expect that to happen. And then the third time it happened, he was like, ah, knocked him over.
Okay, and you said that he was not responsible for the one they looked for the Ramsey run that it looked like he was responsible for.
I don't think so. So if this is the long scramble that set up their first touchdown, so he goes way inside. He puts himself definitively on one side of the guard, and that's just not how he rushes when he rushes on the interior. Like, usually he will go directly at the guy and try to go through him.
Okay, but this was... Going for a gap.
This looked like a stunt where someone forgot to loop.
Okay.
And that would be Dwumfor who forgot to loop. So I thought that didn't... I mean, I'm guessing, right?
Right.
But, like, for me, that didn't look like a natural Rashawn Gary rush in any way whatsoever. It looked like he was going for the gap over and reached the gap over. And if there's no one looping behind that, well, then that's the problem.
Right. So at least one of them had the wrong call.
Yes. And okay. I just assume it's Dwumfor because...
Right.
Well, the tie goes to the older player usually.
Yeah, and Gary is known as a particularly sound player normally.
Well, and I'll also just like, I just don't think that people get the wrong stunt call in their heads.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Rashawn Gary was like, okay, I'm going to stunt, and that was because there wasn't a stunt on.
Right.
So.
Okay. All right. Sticking on the Ramsey scrambles, Quitty kind of got out of his lane too, and...
That wasn't really out of his lane, so they spied with him.
Right.
And then that was another thing where Dwumfor was really kind of firing left. So you kind of expect the quarterback to pop out to the right like he did. And it looked like Pay just didn't kind of get the rhythm of the play well enough.
Okay.
And so he was only able to track the guy down after he got the first down. When, like, I think that was kind of a trap that wanted to induce a scramble and tackle it after like 2 yards.
Well, the thing is, I'm used to our ends being able to track down any quarterback that they face, even running quarterbacks, and Ramsey is a running quarterback, and Pay just got, like, flat-out outrun by that guy.
Well, he caught the guy. He just took 7 yards to do so because he got a late start.
Okay. So those are my little panicky guy questions for Ramsey scrambles.
Okay.
We gave up a fade. Slot fade.
A slot fade.
I thought that wasn't going to hurt me again.
Tyree Cannell got tempoed.
Okay.
So Indiana went to more tempo in this game than they had before in the last four, five, six games. And that was Cannell wasn't quite set up outside like he was supposed to be and was able – they managed to beat him on the slot fade.
Okay, so that's just a one
– Well, I don't –
I mean, Ohio State tempos too.
I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a thing that – we're not going to see against Ohio State. I mean, I think they're going to try to isolate Cannell in coverage, and I think they might get some stuff on him because there's definitely a gap between Cannell and Metellus in terms of, like, my confidence when a ball goes up and he's in coverage.
Right. All right, so increasing my level of little panicky running circle guy, those moments when the receivers are running free across the middle.
Well, you know, one of them was Devin Gill didn't come off his guy on a zone quickly enough. One of them was legit, like, you know, Brandon Watson got picked. One of them was
Legally picked.
Legally picked, yeah. And Hudson, like, so that's going to happen a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, Ohio State is going to get that. They're going to get some guys running open across the middle, and they're going to run for 15, 20 yards a few times because Michigan is going to get caught in man coverage.
Right, but I thought that this year Michigan had run enough zone that teams were not actually calling plays to – I mean, they'll get caught, and the teams will run man beaters against Michigan. But I thought this game was maybe a little bit too much man.
I did too. And I think part of that was the fact that Indiana had a lot of success on the ground in the first half. And so one of the ways that Michigan was going to deal with that is they were going to add a fifth guy to the line to prevent defensive tackles getting doubled.
Right.
Which worked really well at defending Stevie Scott, who didn't have anything really happen in the second half. He had, like, one run that I think there was – I forget exactly what the deal was on his long run, but there's one
run –
He
also jumped over a pile at one point.
Yeah. Well, and so it's like you're going to make trade-offs, and Michigan is going to be facing a very similar rushing attack, and I think that they're going to have to use that fifth guy, and it's just going to be about getting it right enough times, especially because Indiana kind of showed a way to defuse Michigan's pass rush. Like – I had Michigan plus one in 50 pass rush events, and that's not what they're usually doing.
Yeah, Ramsey is, like we said, Ramsey's running quarterback, and he was kind of running away and then throwing away, I thought, in this game a lot. So if he got under pressure, he was probably coached just to get out of there and throw the ball away.
Yeah, I mean, but Indiana did fight Michigan's pass rush to a draw, and that's something that hasn't happened all year, and a large part of that was Michigan would rush four, and Indiana would single block both defensive tackles, and then they would leave a running back in or have a running back chip one of the defensive ends, and then the other defensive end would get one of those doubles that one of the ones that got Winovich knocked out.
Right, and that was mostly with Kemp and Monet in there, right?
Right, but if you can run and you can tempo and you can lock those guys on the field, like you're going to have those defensive tackles who can be effectively blocked one-on-one 100% of the time. And so Michigan's got to combat that, and that again kind of points towards, okay, we need to send five guys at the quarterback to prevent the defensive ends from getting doubled.
Yeah. I mean, that Indiana I thought was, you know, we're still talking about the defense, but that was a Ohio State-like offense that they ran.
Well, I mean, so if you look at Pro Football Focus, those two teams have the shortest depth of target
right.
in the league, and they rely a lot on yards after the catch. One thing that I don't think Ohio State has is they don't have a guy like Ramsey who's going to be able to eat up 30 yards on a scramble. Like Haskins, you know, he gets out of the pocket, and if someone, like, comes in his vicinity, he's like, nope, and he goes down. Now, last week, they ran him 14 times.
Right.
They ran him 14 times for 63 yards, and it was effective in the red zone. He's big. You know, he takes contact, and he falls forward for a couple yards, but he's slow. He's awkward. He had a butt fumble in this game. So, like, I think that Michigan is going to be like, all right, we're going to be responsible with him, but we're not going to overplay him. And if he gets a couple of first down conversions, that's fine. We're going to bottle up J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah. He does not like – we're going to get into Ohio State, but he doesn't like taking contact.
Right. But did you have more stuff?
Yeah. Well, the next one we kind of covered already. Okay. The DTs are average. And Ohio State eats average DTs for breakfast and isn't dumb enough to turtle like Paolo Crist.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I would say that they eat average DTs for breakfast because, you know, they played Penn State.
Yeah.
And they averaged 3.2 yards a carry. They played Purdue and they averaged under 3 yards a carry. Like, there's some issues that, I mean, when you graded their interior offensive line, their run block, like, you must not be grading the way I run block. I grade run blocking, because if I saw those numbers over the course of three games from a Michigan player, that would be the worst lineman in the history of Michigan football.
All right. Now, I was overplaying it because I was a little panicky guy when I wrote that line. But
don't say that. You're supposed to be like...
I'm a bad panicky guy because I wrote the question after I read your UFR and before I actually was totaling up all of my scouting on them and like seeing what the numbers were. And again, everything goes back to Ohio State. But yeah, I think that's just not a panic thing for me. I don't think I don't know if our DTs are going to like whoop on their offensive line, but their offensive line definitely has interior problems.
Okay, and yeah. I mean, they have a center who's 6'7" and doesn't really have the snap countdown, that kind
of
thing.
But. Yeah, well, they're all offensive. They're all 5-star offensive tackles of some sort, or 4-star offensive tackles of some sort, right? Everyone wanted those guys to be their offensive tackle, and Ohio State's like, nope, highly graded offensive lineman, we'll take him, and then they make him a center.
Well, I mean, Pridgen is just a JUCO guy who I think they kind of brought in, and now they're starting him, and it's like, man, that's not a good sign when you have to bring in a JUCO OL.
He was a JUCO, another guy that everyone wanted, though, because he was listed at 6'8" when, like, people were recruiting him.
Yeah, I know, but it's just,
he's still another tackle-style guy who's just a leaner.
I mean, you're talking about a position where, you know, you take years with these guys and you kind of grow into being aligned together to take a JUCO transfer and start a JUCO transfer kind of... I mean, we're going to the Ohio State stuff. We should talk about Indiana.
Yeah. And then the last one we got to as well, where's the pressure?
Well, I mean, yeah, we did mention. I think that Michigan did do a good job when they loaded up and came with those five-man blitzes. You know, I think that, you know, you might have a case that a guy like Isaiah Prince is more vulnerable to a Josh Uche than Indiana's tackles were.
Yeah.
Just because we've seen him against the closest thing that the Big Ten has to offer in Minnesota's Carter Coughlin, and that guy whooped up on Prince. So, you know, I think Michigan will get to Haskins enough, and they'll make a priority because his grade as a quarterback goes off a cliff when he gets pressure.
Well, Ohio State, and Indiana does this too, I thought, in the scouting at least, gets the ball out really quickly.
Well, yeah, of course.
So, like, covering, and that goes back to, like, a lot of the cover one that Michigan was doing, because that slows down the you know, they have to wait a little bit longer before the plays develop. And, you know, if Michigan can get those guys covered long enough to get their natural pressure there, and, you know, if Winovich is available, you can attack from both sides well, and I think that's going to be a key. And I thought this was I'm not alarmed about our defensive line pressure. It's, again, like you said, with the tackles. Offensively, I was less panicked. I just felt like as soon as they brought the Shea Patterson stuff out of the barn, everything was fine.
Well, I do think that it's worth noting that, you know, Michigan had two drives in the fourth quarter that were 15 runs and zero passes. And those both went down to the red zone. They both became field goal drives. And both of them were to go from up 8 to up 11.
Right.
So, you know, you're playing this team and they haven't done anything in the second quarter. You've got a 3rd and 8 and you're up 8 points. I'm like, yeah, run the ball. Like, you're going to win this game as long as you don't create a massive mistake. And if you run the ball, that's not going to create a massive mistake.
I thought
two of the, like, red zone issues were not real red zone issues, but they were just, you know, the right decision to play it really conservative.
And if I was a good panicky guy, I would yell red zone, but I'm not. And therefore, like, I agree with you. It was not a – there were some play calling issues that happened in the red zone. I mean, Gentry dropping a pass and the pass being a little short, like that could happen any play.
And then, so the main play calling issue was the fact their first drive, they come out with these pin and pulls, they run three of them, they do really well, and they get in the red zone and they're running the same thing. And at this point,
yeah, they stuck their hand in the cookie jar too many times.
Right, and it's like, I mean, that's not really a red zone issue. It's a sticking your hand in the cookie jar too many times just to see if it'll work. I think they may have came into this game with a little bit less respect for Indiana than Indiana turned out to warrant.
Right.
And they were just like, all right, we're not going to run Patterson. We're just going to run this stuff, and we're going to run away with a victory. And then they had to kind of adapt their approach later. And then I don't know if Michigan was entirely 100% prepared for it, because Patterson missed more gives in this game than he did against Penn State. Like, he got pretty much every decision right against Penn State. And in the first half, he has an easy touchdown if he just pulls it. And, like, you can see that he knows it.
Yeah.
Like, he jumps up and he claps as soon as he gives the ball. He's like...
And he's watching Higdon, like, burrow his way past a whole
right.
bunch
and,
of dudes, too. Yeah.
Higdon gets a plus three for a 4-yard run because three different guys hit him and he doesn't go down and gets an important first down. But, like, that kind of stuff is... I don't think it's inherent to the red zone issues. And now that, you know, you're going to see a fully activated Shea Patterson.
Yeah.
And that means they're going to throw the ball a little bit more in between the 20s, and they're going to run, or at least threaten to run with him inside the red zone.
Yeah. I think RPOs are probably going to be a lot bigger part of the game plan this week. I think that we're going to get into Ohio State later.
Right.
Yeah.
So the other Indiana thing that I think is of interest for next year is that Andrew Stuber got his first start-ish.
Yeah.
He didn't start, but he played the vast majority of the game. Had some targeting issues on the second level, had a couple iffy pass protection issues, but for a redshirt freshman who's playing his first extended time, I thought he looked pretty good. Like, he, on like that 4th-and-2 conversion that Higdon had, he was able to kind of post up a defensive end on his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, watch, I remember that.
Watch a linebacker shoot outside and then stop. And block that guy and give Higdon the path. And that's, if he doesn't do that, that's a stop.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for a guy in his first game to be able to have that level of awareness, I think is a really good sign. And a couple plays later, he absolutely buried a linebacker in the mode that everybody is like, ooh, that's nasty. and, it's, you know, he had his issues, but he had his positive as well. And I thought, you know, for a guy making essentially his debut, I thought he looked like a guy who Michigan can rely on in 2019.
Yeah, you never – I mean, even Taylor Lewan was looking left and seeing nobody when he should be going and hunting safeties in his first couple of games.
I know. Like, I mean, I literally – like, it was from the 2014 Rutgers game. I saw Kyle Kalis do the same thing. Like, why don't we do that all the time? And it just never happened for 5 years, and now it happened in this game. So,
yeah.
Good job for Stuber. Anything else on the offense?
Higdon missed a couple cuts again, I thought.
No, I thought that True Wilson actually had a bad one in the red zone where they're running a stretch play and they bang the defensive end they want to get out of there.
Right.
And he takes it to the sideline and I'm like, stabbed in the back. Every time I say something nice about a running back.
Yeah, start just ripping on them again.
Who's ripping on them?
No, if you rip on the running backs, they'll do great.
They'll do better?
Yeah.
We'll see. All running backs are bad. There we go.
Yeah, well... Ramsey from 11 Warriors called Higdon average, below average, I believe.
I don't
know. In the situation.
It wasn't below average. It was replacement level or something. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't think he's replacement level, but I also don't think he's irreplaceable.
Oh, that the True Wilson run brought up something else from this game.
Yeah.
Onwenu was just mashing.
Oh, yes. Yes, he was. So I kept, like, clipping him, doing, like, crazy things, and I was like, By the time I got to the post, I was like, wow, there are too many clips of this.
Right. That happens to me with full film all the time because I clip a guy like, that's a better clip. Oh, that's a good one,
right,
too.
Right. So I had like four different clips of him just obliterating people. And like Indiana is not a good rush defense, but he was single-handedly pancaking dudes.
Yeah, but Indiana brought out their big boy. Is it the Syracuse transfer that they barely used all year because they only use him against, like, meatball offenses?
Well, he's not any good.
No, but he's just a big boy. Mm. And, like, in scouting, I noticed that they bring him out for, like, goal line situations, and all he does is just – he's just a very large person sitting in there,
yeah.
Right? And Onwenu, I think that guy actually jumped the snap one time, and Onwenu, like, popped him back out of there.
That was his most impressive play.
Yeah.
Like, he was – like, he there was a defensive tackle who – timed up the snap, blew into both him and Stuber. He was able to stall him out and then go get a linebacker. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, Michigan's going to come up against a couple of really good defensive tackles coming up here. And I kind of think that they have an offensive line to deal with them right now.
Yeah. I mean, they're. I don't know if we've gone against guys of this level all year.
I mean, not since Notre Dame, probably.
Yeah. I think I wrote in my thing that the last time was 2017 Orange Bowl practice.
I think Notre Dame's got some guys.
They
Tillery's a dude.
Tillery's a dude. Yeah, that's true.
Some other dudes too. So I mean, that didn't go as well as we'd hoped, but they've come a long way since.
Yeah, Tillery's also like 6'7", and these guys are both, I mean, especially Landers is like small.
He's a little bulldog.
Yeah.
But so Indiana's stuff that I think we didn't quite get to on the offense was Patterson looked about as comfortable as he did in the Rutgers game. He was missing some deep shots, like he overthrew Tariq Black by a yard.
Yeah.
He had a couple other kind of near misses on 20 or 30 yard passes. And that's going to happen even if you're a very good downfield thrower, I think just one of those things. But that seam route to Gentry for 40 yards, he looks off the safety. He comes to Gentry. He has a feeling this is going to be open. And when it's open, he puts it dead on his chest. So, like that's the kind of stuff that we were hoping we would see a little bit more of. Obviously, the level of opposition here is not that great, but might not be that great this weekend.
He's resetting my expectations. When we used to have like that scissors play that they ran where Eubanks got the touchdown, when a guy got that screamingly open, Indiana just completely busted that coverage, but when a guy got that screamingly open, I would panic and worry that we would not hit that guy because it happened so many times to us. And my expectations when that ball went in the air was that Eubanks was going to catch it and run with it. And I wasn't worried anymore. And that for a Michigan fan is a big step.
True enough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I think you saw Michigan kind of come into this game trying to keep everything in the barn, trying to get everybody healthy to the game, and had a bit of a slow start, especially on defense, and kind of slow motion pounded their way into the kind of win that I think is common the week before the game.
Well,
you kind of have this like kind of dead period where Michigan just wants to get to the end of the season.
Yep.
And so they kind of habitually underperform the week before the game.
Well, you saw Tom Allen at the end of the first half. This was their Super Bowl.
They have like
and he won his Super Bowl.
They have a bucket game for a bowl next week. Like
I can't. No one cares about the bucket.
I you care know, about the bucket.
Yeah, well, that you care about the bucket the way you care about like Harvard Yale, like
I don't care about Harvard Yale.
Oh, that's a fun one. A guy flicked off someone on the way to the
end
zone.
He didn't. He just gave him like a number, like I'm number one, and they're like, "This is Harvard Yale, sir. That is impertinent."
Well, you can't do that.
And
at
they
Harvard.
Flagged him.
Harvard man does not do such things.
Indeed. Anything else from the Indiana game at all?
No, it's just like, let's get the passes and get to Ohio State.
All right. Well, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll do exactly that.
Nice.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
7,000 reasons I should deceive them all the rest. They follow the latest trends and the latest stance on life. What fantasies see that you wouldn't believe? It's a color.
Welcome to MGO Radio Salmon Point 65.
That's close. Yeah, it was actually tuna.
Tuna?
Yeah. But we could read our sponsors.
We are live at the Bow Store on Main Street. They're, of course, one of our sponsors. Why don't you read the rest of our sponsors?
We actually have a couple of them here today. Their sponsors are Underground Printing, the Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homesure Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus.
All right, so Ohio State.
Yeah.
I don't like saying the things I think about Ohio State because I think Ohio State is a bad football team that is going to be ruthlessly exposed on Saturday, and that makes me feel terrified.
I mean, S&P says that they're a good offense and a average man's defense, and all the panicking is because Ohio State has never learned to deal with an average man's defense.
No, this is the football equivalent of Nebraska. They're the football equivalent of Maryland.
Okay.
They're the football equivalent of Penn State. They were in razor sharp games, razor close games in all those games.
They were.
And what happened when Michigan played those teams? 56-10, 42-7, and 42-21.
Yeah.
And this is what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. That I just
I can't exercise everything that fast, mostly because Dwayne Haskins is legit.
He is.
And, like, once they started running him with Maryland, I mean, Maryland's defense is not any good. But
it's not.
What they were doing with him made a lot more sense than the things they've been doing all year, which was protecting him.
I mean, they did run him a lot, and it was effective. But I feel like they were saving that for Michigan, and they had to pull it out a week early.
Yeah, that or the other thing is like they've been pulling Tate Martell out when after like he has one of his inexplicable goes down on 3rd and 7 at, you know, instead of trying to get the first down kind of things. He does not like contact.
Haskins
does not like contact. And once in a while when he does one of those things, they bring out Tate Martell for a drive and do the Tate Martell stuff, which is always tackle over and just runs.
It's red zone stuff.
You know, there was a theory that kind of lit a fire under Haskins and said, well, if you're not going to run the ball, then we're going to put in the guy who runs the ball sometimes, and you're not going to get all your stats. I personally don't follow it,
no.
But I was reading that on the Ohio State.
The Ohio State people are coming up with every crazy conspiracy theory in the world.
I mean,
we are a weathered fan base.
But
we go outside and there's like little shards of ice in the wind and we're like, been here before.
Yeah.
And Ohio State's little baby bottom feelings are exposed to the air now and they're just freaking out.
Yeah. And you know what? It really, I mean, we'll get into their defense in a little bit, but their offense, is good, but doesn't feel like an Ohio State offense anymore.
No, and that's because they've lost JT Barrett. They are no longer an automatic third and short team.
Right.
And that has changed their equation to the point where they're running a fourth and two, a fourth and goal bubble screen, a wide receiver screen from the two. And that's just a whole new world for them.
Well, and their third and two play calling a lot of times is mesh instead of just, I mean, it just used to be, okay, they're going to run it. And if they don't get it this time, they're going to run it on fourth down and they're going to get it then.
It was just a depressing.
Yeah. and
slog. It was like a World War I advance, except it worked.
Yeah, except for the one time, but then they got the inch anyway.
Yeah.
But, we were surprised when it worked, when it almost didn't work that one play. And Haskins is large enough to be able to run that kind of stuff. And, again, he doesn't take off. He throws the ball away faster than he needs to.
He's slow. He's awkward. He's not going to break an open field tackle. He will get you 2 or 3 yards after he gets hit because he is a big dude and he'll fall forward. But it's a different world. And so you see something like J.K. Dobbins. Last year, J.K. Dobbins once he got to 5 yards, he got 8 more yards. That was his average.
Right.
This year, once he gets to 5 yards, he gets 3 more yards. So this is a run offense that's been constricted by the fact that they can't rely on their quarterback to option a guy off. And I think Michigan has seen the opposite happen. Like, what happened to Michigan's ground game once they made their quarterback someone you have to pay attention to? You know, it opens up a ton of stuff.
Right.
And Ohio State is going to try to get that to work. But how many hits are they going to expose Haskins to? And what deleterious effect might that have on his passing game? And are they going to be able to protect? I think that's an open question. So they have so many short passes that their sack rate is really good. So it's like 3.3%. They're a top 10 and all that stuff.
Right.
But what happens if Michigan is able to jam up the short stuff and make him sit in the pocket for 2.5, 3, 4 seconds? Can Isaiah Prince get whooped like he got whooped against Minnesota?
And Michigan State.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and that was the game that I opened my eyes, because Michigan State really held. I think they held him to like 4.5 yards per attempt.
Yeah,
and that was with one big catch and run too. So,
and Kenny Willekes went off in that game.
He did. I was watching that game thinking, oh man, if Winovich is healthy, because that's the kind of play. It is the kind of game where a defensive end can really take over.
And
Gary on the other side too.
If you can get to him. Pro Football Focus grades him out as like a 90 from a clean pocket, which is great. They grade him out as a 46 or a 49 whenever he gets pressure, which is like John O'Korn level.
Right.
He's awful.
Right. They had that graphic with Patterson on it too.
So
to compare the two.
And when you have, remember the Wisconsin game where Hornibrook just gets some pressure, has to move his feet, and he just completely falls apart?
Yeah.
Haskins is the same guy. So it's like, can Michigan get to him on a consistent basis, set up a third and long, and then get Josh Uche on the field? Because Josh Uche looks a lot like Carter Coughlin, the outside linebacker for Minnesota, who just gave Prince the business in that game. So, like, I just kind of feel like they're going to get some touchdowns. They're going to get, you know, a drive here or there. But I kind of feel like Michigan is a good spot to shut off their yards after catch. Because that's what they depend on. They're the best team in the country in yards after catch.
Right.
Michigan is fourth best at preventing yards after catch. So,
I mean, that is the ball game. And yeah. I mean, it was great seeing the safeties really good at it this year, especially against Indiana this week. I thought we're shutting down anything after the catch, which was a big test for Indiana. They did it to Penn State as well, who were not great tacklers at the safety level.
Well, but they also want to get their slot receivers kind of moving across the field, get those drag routes.
Yeah.
Happens sometimes that Michigan shut off KJ Hamler. You know, they shut off JD Spielman. Like, they face guys kind of in the same stratosphere as KJ Hill, as Paris Campbell, and via Don Brown, various trap coverages, and Michigan's ability to tackle, they haven't really given up a whole lot in that department. So, like, I feel like Michigan's got some strengths pointed at Ohio State's weaknesses, and Ohio State has some weaknesses that Michigan can exploit.
Yeah. They are – Haskins is an NFL quarterback, and he's going to play in the NFL. He's a lower end of the half NFL quarterback.
And he's a worse college quarterback than he will be as an NFL quarterback.
Yes. And I don't think they know how to coach an NFL quarterback at Ohio State right now.
No, that's a good point because, you know, for the last 4 years, they're just this team that gets in third and short a ton, and they convert every time.
Right.
And that's not the case this year. I think they're 37th at converting third and short, and they're 71st in getting into third and short. So the whole kind of steamroller effect of their offense is now gone.
Right.
And they've replaced it with a lot of explosive plays where it's run after the catch. So
yeah.
Bottle that up and see what happens.
Yep.
On the other side of the ball.
They've got a problem. They have a huge – oh, anyone who watched the Maryland game
so the
had thing, to see number 25.
I mean, the thing about the Maryland game is that – so McFarland goes off tackle for an 80-yard touchdown run on, like, the first play of the game.
Right.
That wasn't even, like, Canada doing anything.
No, it was just two guys
they just
jumping inside.
Up.
The cornerback probably had the edge and, like, jumped inside.
Right, and then that was it.
Right, but if that happens, the safety's just got to replace him.
So you're 11 games into a season, and people don't know who the force player is?
Right.
So I have a theory about this.
Okay.
I have a theory is that they didn't Drevno Shiano.
Right.
So they bring in Alex Grinch as their 10th coach in the offseason. Alex Grinch is the defensive coordinator at
for
Washington
Wazoo.
State.
Yeah.
So that's a really weird move to make if you're taking a demotion to go to Ohio State from a good Power 5 program. So what was the plan there? The plan there was to ship Greg Schiano off to another team to be the head coach.
Right.
The problem was the guy at Tennessee was dumb enough to take that bait. And they weren't like shopping around for Tennessee. They were like,
right.
Hey, Ohio or
yeah.
Some other MAC team, like, come take this guy off our hands.
You just lost PJ Fleck. Do you want Greg Schiano?
Yeah. And then when that blew up and Schiano didn't get the job and had to go back to Ohio State, they have a too-many-cook situation where Grinch is there and Schiano's there.
Right.
And who's the defensive coordinator? It's the same thing that happened to Michigan's offensive line last year when they had two offensive line coaches.
Right. I mean, that's a good theory.
It's a pretty good theory.
There's another theory that Schiano just kind of likes to get talent and it just kind of was – I think Schiano was just cruising for a Tennessee job or whatever too. And when I watch these cornerbacks – they are not well coached. And I'm not the person who's saying this. This is like the NFL guys on Twitter who go nuts every single time they see one of these guys try to jam somebody. And Brett Coleman did a whole video on
Gary and Conley.
On Conley. And like you see the same thing. They don't have the technique to jam, and they make up for it because they're fast, they're five stars, they're right. Just really good at that. And they also don't know how to set an edge. Like they're just
well, and like
you're being five stars.
Kendall
for 3 years.
Sheffield's playing bail technique in cover three and lets a guy run by him.
Yeah,
in the Maryland game, I'm like, what is even going on here? So, they have problems with deep coverage with their cornerbacks.
Yep.
Patterson is, I think, the number five guy in the country on deep shots, according to Pro Football Focus.
Yep.
Donovan Peoples-Jones, five star, can match their athleticism. Nico Collins, kind of the same thing. Tariq Black, we'll see. It feels like the over-under on Michigan touchdowns of more than 40 yards is like 1.5.
Yeah, I mean, you
got to hit. In the air.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
like, what does Michigan have stored up to mess with run fits for linebackers who can't fit an outside zone?
Right.
Like
that.
I hate this because I'm like, we should put up 42 points against this defense.
I the thing about defense is you can pick your poison. So, like, on offense, you can kind of cover up someone who's a little bit of a problem. On defense, Maryland, I mean, when they did attack somebody, they went right for the lane of the free safety, who is the third free safety they've started because the other guys lost their jobs to the other dudes. I don't know who they're going to start this one because this guy was so bad. I mean, his video of him trying to fill and then just, like, falling on the ground is still all over the internet, and that's not even his third worst play from this game.
All right.
And I think that's part of the problem with the cornerbacks is they're not playing. You know, when you play man in a or you play cover one, you're getting into the weeds a little bit, but you know that you have help inside, so you play that a certain way. These guys are just out there on an island, and they're playing it like they're on an island because they don't expect the free safety to be there. And that's a good thing to expect because he's usually not.
Well, you know, the thing that just kind of grabs me is that they're, I think, 125th in defensive, like preventing explosive plays.
Yes.
125th. That's yep. like Rutgers passing game territory.
Yep. That's, I mean, that, there's the design of their defense is they're going to bring either six or they're going to bring four and fire the linebackers at the first smell of run action.
Yeah.
And so the linebacker level's gone. That's why they're so susceptible to RPOs, too. And then they just bring down the safeties on that because you're missing the linebacker level, so now you have to have somebody do mid coverage. So who's got deep coverage? They expect the cornerbacks just to take those guys. And the cornerbacks, if they don't get a jam, or if they can get outrun, and that was the thing, Maryland has some fast little guys. So yes. Maryland kind of beat them over the top with speed. But there was one play where Kendall Sheffield just got shoved off the on the ground. And he gets up asking for a flag because he just got put on the ground. And if that's DPJ and not like a – I mean, if that, a little guy's doing that, a little 5'9" Maryland guy's doing that, he's going against DPJ with that kind of thing, he's not catching up.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's why they're getting hit with explosive plays, but they also have a great defensive line, and that's why they're not getting hit with tons of explosive plays.
Yeah, and but they really suffered when Bosa went out because their replacement for him, Jonathan Cooper, has one sack on the year.
Yep.
And that's been, like, Chase Young is looking like a future star, 5.5 sacks. Draymond Jones is one of the best defensive tackles in the country, and he gets a lot of interior rush. But I don't think they have the consistent, like, end-of-the-world pressure that they were going to have if Bosa was hale and ready.
Yeah, I mean, Bosa was, like, a best player in the country candidate. Right. And Cooper, I wish I could have found the article this week, but when Cooper was the same class as Gary and was also a 5-star, so Ohio State were like, he's just as good as Gary. He just didn't go to as many camps.
He's kind of just a guy.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. And that kind of, this is why I thought they were most like Michigan State's defense up front, where they've just got three good linemen, but there's one guy who's just kind of a guy. Mm. And there's a big difference between being able to pass rush from both guys and having one guy, one side really good at pass rushing, right, and the other side just kind of open. And, you know, Landers is trouble. Jones is obviously trouble. And they have lots of talent out there to bring on third and long. And I think that's why they're not bad defense.
Their sack rate is, like, not great. It's, like, they get contributions from a couple of guys, but it's just they don't have the consistency. They don't have they don't have a rush package this year.
Yeah.
Like before, they would put four defensive ends out there and be like, hey, good luck at
right.
this. And this year, it's just kind of like what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, you can leave Jones out there. The I think part of it is their backups have not been that great this year. Like normally,
you know, get a little worn down.
Yeah. So like normally you can put in like a second row of shark teeth. And Larry Johnson, normally pretty good at getting those guys. They've just got a whole bunch of 5-stars who are like true freshmen or true sophomores. They really have one defensive lineman who rotates with the starters, and the rest, it's just a 5-man line. Mm. And the other guys like Jashawn Cornell and Ty Smith are just young dudes who get in there once in a while, but you don't want to leave them in there that long.
Right. So, I mean, it's a defense with a lot of talent on it, but one that doesn't seem to be coaching it very well.
Yeah.
Except along the defensive line.
Yeah. Now that Smith is gone, they talk about their linebackers coach is the worst thing in the world.
Yes. And that's not even getting into the guy who's doing whatever with the cornerbacks.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's Shiano.
All right. We got to take a break. We're going to come back, and it's time for our annual debacle of a segment with John U. Bacon. So prepare thyselves.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley. So did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
To MGO Radio live at the Bo Store. For some reason, we're turning stuff back down and up.
Yeah, that's me. Our ads are actually playing pretty quietly, so.
All right.
It's our headphones.
What's up, John Bacon?
Sup. I started an intercollegiate football contest tomorrow.
Just say sup?
I did. Am I pulling that off with my LL Bean cardigan sweater or not?
I mean, I say ain't sometimes, so I guess I can't criticize, but I'm going to anyway.
Ain't is timeless. Sup is like that ended in 1997.
Yeah, I'm throwing
it's kind of like
ironically.
Was up. Yeah. Yes. Like, yeah. Sup.
My street cred is lacking in this case.
You might have been talking about taking your repast at a local inn.
Nice. Perhaps. Nice.
Yeah.
As one might sup.
Yes.
Right. Yes. So that would be credible, especially with your outfit and general demeanor.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How you doing?
I'm doing shockingly well. Yourself?
I'm tired.
You're tired? Well, this time of year, everyone gets tired, don't they?
Yeah. I loved it when the season ended the week before Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Me too, man. And that's a big problem for a couple reasons. One is, here we go, cranky old man stuff. look, when the game's at home, of course, for Michigan, half the students are gone, at least. It's unfair to them. The biggest game of the year you're not there for, of course, is where memories are made. It's unfair to the players, of course, to have a good chunk of the tickets sold to Buckeye fans or whatever. So I think the whole thing stinks, except I'll say this. It is better for the players in terms of they can rest this week. No classes, basically Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Wednesday's pretty much a wash. So they do get a chance to chill out a little bit. So.
Yeah, and then, of course, they get to play in the game.
I've heard that.
How are we feeling, Johnny Biggin?
I think this is Michigan's year. And, of course, you say that at your own peril, and I believe you wrote at one point, predictions are worthless, and they are.
Well, that's why I always predict like scores that are impossible to get in football. To like remind people that the act of predicting is a futile enterprise.
It is futile. I got a 24-21 for what it's worth. I will say a few things about
24-21.
Yes.
How are they going to hold us to 24? God, I hate myself right now. All right, go ahead.
Theory is, one is that despite six trips to the red zone last week with all field goals, of course, to show for it, that's actually probably a good thing for Michigan going into this thing with a new kicker. The kids got confidence. They don't need to knock in 54-yarders. They'll have to knock in 35-yarders, which what the guy clearly has got dialed in. Mr. Moody, that is, of course. So that's a good sign. I think all the emotion, all the incentive. There's not one guy in Ohio State's team who's lost to Michigan. You cannot convince a 20-year-old, and I've tried to convince 20-year-olds of various things, all right, that something can happen that has never happened before. And Michigan, man, it's all the incentive in the world. These guys are hungry. And Bosa, that little scenario, too, tells me where this team's head's at.
If the guy doesn't want to return because he's hurt.
I get that.
But to feel that the best place for you to be to prep for the NFL draft is not with your college program is like, that's a little bit of...
Not the Ohio State University. You got a medical center right there, of course. You've got serious trainers, weight rooms, and whatnot.
I'm cautious on that one just because it's Bosa, and like the Bosa family has been a football factory more than a family forever.
They're just
forever.
One giant forehead vein.
Yes. Like, I imagine like there's a Bosa complex in Florida somewhere where they're just like training these children, and he just goes back there when he's done. The other thing that I don't really believe in is the Urban Meyer is falling apart emotionally thing.
Are you serious?
I mean, have you ever watched me watching a Michigan game? I look exactly like Urban Meyer does.
I wouldn't want you to be the football coach of my program either.
But I'm sure it's meaningful to him that I'm sure every coach looks like that on the sideline. I've watched so much football. Coaches look like that.
Does David Shaw look like that on the sideline?
No, but David Shaw doesn't have a soul right now. That's why he doesn't ever.
That's.
Yeah, all right. I'm sorry, David Shaw.
Is that a little strong, maybe?
Yeah.
Is the soulless part?
He just takes it out of foot. He takes
he's
the soul
out of the heart.
Yeah, I hate watching Stanford football.
No, but Bully aggressive. He didn't look angst. Urban Meyer's in deep anguish, is my impression. However, the guy's 10-1. Let's not forget this.
Okay,
he's 10-1.
There's 10-1, and then there's 10-1 again.
Getting waxed by Purdue. At Purdue, of course.
He's won two coin flips, and he had two other games where he had to roll over three, and he's gotten all four of those.
And I can take it back. He's not 10-1. The Buckeyes are. He's 7-1.
That's true.
Thanks to the weird start to the season, which is all on him, in my opinion. It's a weird time down there for sure.
He's really 9-1. He coached the whole week and then just didn't show up. He didn't have to show up for the game. Like, that was just window dressing. Like, oh, it looks like three games.
He's like
now.
A backup quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
Got the hat.
Todd Collins.
Yeah. Like, how much does a coach do?
If
how much
Todd Collins wanted his head to explode. He's like bent over on the sideline, gripping both sides of his head. And you think this is just like par for the course?
I can't talk.
This is part of the narrative about football.
But what I'm saying is you are ill suited to be a football coach.
Right.
Granted.
And I feel
we love you, but
I feel like if the guy on the sideline is like and Seth's like, oh, that's what I do during a football game, that is a bad sign for that football team.
If he looks like Seth on the sideline,
right.
They have a problem.
Exactly.
Ohio State, you have a problem. Your coach is me.
It's called the Seth rule.
Yeah. I would probably teach cornerbacks a little bit better.
So, I mean, I was kind of daydreaming about this because people are like, okay, what happens after Urban Meyer? They hire John Harbaugh, and John Harbaugh does everything in his power to submarine the Buckeye program from within.
This is the deep state theory
right.
of college football.
Like, only recruits.
Kill it from the inside. Absolutely.
Only recruits Ukrainians.
This is the Manchurian candidate.
Yeah.
We've gone to this.
And he gets his buyout, and then Michigan hires him for an exorbitant amount of money to coach Olympic sports. That's my
because he'll do that, right?
Yeah, sure. Well,
so I'll tell you what.
There's one flaw in the plan.
Ohio State, one possibility, a long one, I think. Lions could be a possibility. Notre Dame could be a possibility for John Harbaugh. I'm throwing stuff out there.
Notre Dame?
They're not getting rid
Where's
of
Where's Brian Kelly going?
Yeah. Not as crazy as you think.
Where's Brian Kelly going?
Look. He is getting itchy and...
Itchy?
And Notre Dame fans really don't like him.
I know that.
And that includes the administration, which is important, because they write checks.
I know, but he's undefeated right now.
I understand
he
that.
He hasn't killed a kid in 5 years.
This happened last time he was about to...
I'm not... If you want to follow that one up, Seth, you go right ahead.
No, I was trying to move right past it.
If they were
going to
do it, they would have done it then, right? Like,
you'd think so. You'd think so.
I'm just saying.
I think last time he was like close to getting fired was when he went to the national championship game.
So he's
So he just does this when
I think they're just
contract
doomed,
years, right?
They're just doomed to like be together forever in this hateful marriage. Because like he's not bad enough to fire,
right?
He's not good enough to go get another job. Like if you're USC, are you that happy about hiring Brian Kelly?
Oh,
if you're
God.
An NFL team, is that
USC is one of those great unhappy places now? I mean, Lane Kiffin, go right ahead. I'm hearing James Franklin, by the way.
A lot of people are. Which would be hilarious because
it would be to me.
He's a great recruiter, and that's the one thing you don't need to be at USC. You just need to be like
open the gates,
right? And like every LA five
open the gate,
is,
and like talent like falls in by accident,
right? So you're gonna hire LA. Frames Janklin to recruit for you? Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy.
Hey, look,
I guarantee
if you're asking ADs, including Lynn Swann of all people, to be rational, calculating people who can foresee what you're going to be getting and project the future, you're asking a lot. Lane Kiffin keeps getting hired.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin isn't getting hired by USC.
No, he has been once, though.
I'm aware of that, yes.
That's enough for me.
Okay.
The point is that Charlie Weiss got hired twice. ADs are exceptionally
irrational.
Okay, getting
hired by Kansas doesn't count. I mean, they just hired less, and that. How do you think that's going to go?
I think they're going to be better.
It's going to be watchable.
I don't think they are.
Really?
They just gave Oklahoma a game.
That is true.
And they fired that guy. Mm-hmm. And, like, he walked in, and his record's terrible or whatever, but he's walking into the worst program in the Power Five. He recruits Puka Williams. Mm-hmm. And
named Puka Williams, but anyway.
And he wins three games, and they ship him off for Les Miles, who couldn't like figure out how to make the LSU offense with OBJ on it good. Mm. Like, how's this going to work?
The AD is Jeff Long, who, of course, hired Brett Bielema at Arkansas.
Yeah. And he's a Michigan guy, too.
He is. He's got Michigan roots.
Yeah,
so
he was one of the candidates for a long time.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Like, you're just hiring a guy because he's like your Michigan bro, and he's like 65, and he's got a belt program, and he's crazy already. Like, how much more crazy is Les Miles going to be in 4 years?
But back to Seth's point, I agree with you that Seth should not be a head coach.
I agree with myself as well.
I think Seth agrees with this, actually.
Yep.
However, I will give you the notion that all head coaches are crazy. If I'm a rational one, I'll show you guys who's 6-5.
Sure.
There you go. These guys are not – it's not a well profession. I've been around these guys, been in their meetings. Man, you could not pay me $7 million to do that job. Trust me. It is too – crazy by half for me to even touch that thing. Not that anyone's asking. I'm getting as many offers as Seth Fisher is currently.
I'd hire you over Seth.
Thank you very much. That's a
what?
I at least know defensive line technique.
I know, but you know, you'd just be so nervous that you'd just call out pudding on several plays, and that's not even a call.
It's a good play.
That's a good play. The much maligned pudding. Well, pudding 45 on the sweep.
Putting right is like our base play.
You'd be like
putting right.
You'd be like Durkin after he took the Maryland job. People would be looking at you on
putting
the
right. Putting right.
Be like,
you know it. Putting right.
I bet my quarterback would like know what plays to call anyways. He's just like, what's Seth call? It doesn't matter, dude. Let's just do an option.
Yeah. So that's why I'm hiring him.
There you go.
He could be a CEO coach
with a sweater. I certainly could. There you go. So I think that it is Michigan's year. Now, having said all that,
nice segue.
Thank you. We went full circle. Bo said to me years ago, of course, that don't forget, Megan, the damn ball is pointy. No one knows anything. No one knows anything. It bounces this way, it bounces that way.
That's good.
There's a point to that.
I'm going to start using that.
Damn ball is pointy.
You have to do it with the Bo voice.
I don't have a Bo voice.
That's the whole point. You can't do Bo quotes without the Bo voice.
Well, I don't have one. So
no one everyone's like,
do it anyway.
The team.
The team. The team.
You're right.
And a Shakespearean, yes. The team.
I mean, I have my bear who's looking for a hat voice I could use.
Go for that one.
You want to go for that one?
That's pretty close.
The damn ball is pointy. Kid loves that one.
That's my Cat in the Hat voice.
My Cat in the Hat voice is chaotic neutral, so it changes constantly.
Oh,
chaotic neutral.
Yeah,
is that a phrase your kid now knows?
He will. Much. I mean, it's a D&D thing. It's a surprise.
I see.
Ah, yeah. What, you're not into? You're not into the role playing? Don't answer that.
Don't go there. I'm a happily married man.
I'm. I feel like we're into a real John Bacon segment now, though.
I think it took what 3-4 minutes.
Yeah,
I think
really good.
Just a little warming up in the bullpen. We're all set. Yeah. So
D&D it would not be the thing that I thought we would bring up for the Bacon segment. I didn't have anything prepared for a D&D part with Bakes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, you've been coaching the team a little bit this year.
Man, you'd be hard pressed to find a more likable bunch.
Yeah.
And it sounds corny to say it. I've never been around a bad bunch. I got to say that at Michigan. some are more dedicated. Some are more likable. This team, of course, actually goes to class the whole bit. They have in the past. But this seems like breaking records. And look at Chase coming back for a fifth year. Look at Karan Higdon. On paper, they probably shouldn't have. You can make a case for that, given the Jake Butt phenomenon, of course. So just seeing these guys all come back, you hope these guys, it pays off for them, of course. It's a very likable bunch. And Shea Patterson, for a guy here only now 11 months, done an amazing job of getting the team cohesive around him, which is hard to do, I think. And
well, if you're Shea Patterson and you walk into this quarterback room and then you do what you do, people are like, I like that guy. This is a guy I can get behind. This is a good.
True, but he's got a certain kind of personality, though, sure, which not everyone's got. I will say, of course, with McCaffrey out, hope his knees are healthy because.
Well, they've finally gotten their starting quarterback to the game unscathed,
which is unheard of.
It's a real rarity.
Right.
And sometimes when it does, Devin Gardner breaks his foot in the second quarter.
Right.
Or, Jake Rudock.
And still wants the ball. I give him credit. Look, last year, if Spate was two years ago, if Spate was fully healthy, you could see how bad that shoulder was. He could not throw more than 15 yards downfield.
He didn't throw one pass.
Once the Buckeyes figured that out, man, things got tight. If he was fully healthy, I think they win that game.
Last year, if you had an average quarterback,
you win that game. The play calling at Michigan State last year was as bad as it was good for Ohio State, was my impression, that they out-schemed him, man. I saw wide open guys in the flats left and right, and I think Seth Fisher, he may not be your head coach, but Seth Fisher makes that pass.
I don't think you've seen me throw a pass.
Yeah, that's
but I saw that those.
That's 50-50, and I'll take that.
I have my job.
So if Shea stays healthy tomorrow, man, that's huge.
And if you look at, first year of Harbaugh, you have the terrible defensive performance in the second half when D.J. Durkin does nothing.
Right.
Since that point.
Which was surprising.
And the offense that year actually was really well. They had a lot of great stuff in the offense that year.
Yeah, and they just couldn't exit. But the last two games have felt like Michigan is both the better team and the better prepared team, except for quarterback last year. And honestly, quarterback the year before. You have three turnovers from Wilton Spate, one of them a fumble on an exchange on the goal line.
Right.
Second pick six. Michigan can just get through that game with one turnover from their quarterback instead of three, that's a win.
Also, the weather is supposed to be rainy, they say.
The latest that I looked up was it would be a little bit rainy early, but then it would clear up. So, probably good.
Actually, it's one of the rare games I can think of where bad weather might be in Michigan's favor.
Make
Haskins throw the ball in the rain, man. He can't run.
I agree with that, but I also think that Michigan has a big mismatch in their passing game versus Ohio State's passing defense. So, if Piggy can hit 260-yard bombs against them in the second half, what is Shea Patterson going to be able to do? Rain usually favors the team that's not as good, so I'm like, let's make it.
Right.
Clear.
My take on that is Shea can run a whole lot better than Haskins can.
That's true.
If it comes down to sloppy conditions, which apparently it's not going to.
It should be pretty fine. It's going to be 50-ish. It's going to be a nice day.
It's a Michigan-Ohio State game.
Yeah. Overcast, gunmetal gray sky.
Against a blue-gray October sky, the four horsemen. Row it again. There you go. There's your Shakespeare voice.
Where's Keith Jackson when you need him? He had a great introduction to a game at Ohio State once where he actually made Columbus, Ohio sound majestic.
He is missed. at 6'5", a big hoss of a man.
Hoss?
A big hoss of a man.
Who was the guy who
That's
wanted to be called a
all.
Hoss?
What? It was Anderson, the offensive lineman.
Okay, yeah.
Hoss.
A big hoss of a man, lower on the timber.
It's a hoss.
Hoss, as opposed to
hoss. You sound like a medieval
court jester. Here we go.
You can't use a haughty voice to say hoss.
Can't. Yeah.
Hoss.
Haas.
By the way, you guys got a lot of opinions.
Okay, and you just noticed this.
You're one to talk.
Oh, that's right. We're paid for these. I forgot.
Yeah. I mean, but I feel like, you know, if Michigan just doesn't screw it up, they're going to
win. I think that's true. I think it's theirs to lose. I think if they play their best, I don't see them losing. That's my take on that one. And here's the macro question, the meta question. If they win this game, are Michigan fans satisfied? I think they actually might be. Now, of course, on Sunday that all changes. We have to beat Northwestern, blah, 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 will be the storyline. But I think that I can think a few years, based on the last 15, I guess, that they're not thinking about necessarily the playoffs and blah, 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 blah. I think beating Ohio State pretty much erases all the marks that Jim's had to deal with.
I think you'd have to beat Northwestern. Because like to
if it were somewhere else, if it was Wisconsin, you could probably get away with losing it and right. say good year. But Northwestern's like a 2-foot putt.
Right.
You got to get that one.
And then like if they end up in the playoff and they play Alabama and they lose by 30 points, I'll be like, eh.
Yeah. I think the main thing if they get to the playoffs is to avoid the 38-0 Michigan State.
Right. You got to score. Score 1 point.
Got to score 1 point. All right. Here's a scenario for you. Georgia beats Alabama. They both get in. Michigan runs the table. It does not get in.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Possibly.
That would blow up the whole playoff. Like Michigan would get in over Alabama. That is, I believe that with everything.
What did I read? Was it Joel Klatt, one of those? No team has ever won all their league games and the league title game and not gotten in.
Well, yeah, but there's only like 4 years that's existed.
Right.
So, the clear distinction between Ohio State last year versus Alabama and this year is that Ohio State had two losses last year.
Yeah.
And
no two loss team has ever gotten in. So.
Right. And then if, you know, Ohio State had one loss last year, they're getting in over Alabama.
Right.
Because they actually went and they won their conference and they had the same record. So a version of Michigan with the same record as Alabama and a conference championship gets in.
I think you're right.
I believe that. If they don't, you know, I'd almost rather go to the Rose Bowl and see Washington State.
And smack them around a little bit.
And then claim to be national champions like UCF. Why not?
By the way, yeah. Speaking of opinions, I got about 8 about that. I'm tired of that crap. Are you kidding me? UCF national champs.
Oh, I disagree with you entirely. Go for it. Go for it. You didn't get a chance to play anybody. You're UCF. What else? What are they going to do to you? Is Alabama going to come and take your national championship?
I suppose it is a defenseless crime in that sense. But nonetheless, it's... Like, I never bought the UCF thing. I never bought the Boise State thing. Joe Paterno years ago said around 96, 97. He'd been around the Big Ten twice at that point. And they said, okay, you've been home and away a couple times, all the places. What do you think? He said, well, you know, Michigan and Ohio State are both great, no surprise. Big crowds, tough games, et cetera. He'd won some, he'd lost some. He said, but what I didn't expect is you go to Indiana and you beat them and you're beaten up. And you go to Purdue and you beat them and you're beaten up. In other words, the floor of the Big Ten is fairly high, usually, most years. Whereas if you're playing Temple and teams like that he's been playing in the past at Penn State, the very weak non-conference schedule or independent schedule, you don't get that. And that's, I mean, Boise State's got to get up for one big game against Oklahoma or whatever in a bowl game. Same with UCF. That's it.
Right.
Not the same thing.
No.
And by the way.
No one's going to argue that UCF should go to the playoffs this year. I'm not arguing that, like, no, they're just. If you're going to be an F, and if they're going, everyone's going to pretend that the mid majors and the Power Five are in the same league, then let them pretend that they get a national championship. The system's rigged against them anyway. I don't care if they.
But
do
the
that.
System should be, is my point. That if you're not, I'm all for Power Five snobism because if you're not in a Power Five league, you're not doing this every week.
They should just have a Group of Five national championship.
They should
four games, mini playoff. Let's go.
Yeah. They just these are the Group of Five teams.
You're
going to
get that sooner or later anyway.
Yeah,
they're all lower division teams that wanted to call themselves Division One because then looks like you're playing Division One ball. So then they made Division One A way in Double A, and then that wasn't good enough. We had to be Division One A, and then the FBS and FC. It doesn't. They're all just trying to pretend to be Division One teams. But Michigan and UCF are not competing for the same national championship.
All right, yeah, no question about that. So also, Michigan beats Ohio State tomorrow. All of our lives change because we're done answering the question is Jim on the hot seat? No, he's not. will he leave? You know, what will it take? If they lose tomorrow, he'll be coaching next year. What do you think is going to happen?
Right.
You keep doing it. Bo lost 7 bowl games in a row. He was not fired. He did not quit. You came back and did it again the next year, and you kept doing it and finally got better, obviously. So that's the question.
That's a good segue into our next segment.
Which is?
Well, we have a gimmicky top five, which is our the worst off-season takes, some of which have to be our own.
Nice to own it.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. By the way, one of my favorite things to do in the world, and this is a fun game you guys can all play, is give Brian Cook compliments. Nothing will screw him up, especially if they're sincere and accurate. It'll drive him crazy. It's like water on a duck's back. He doesn't know what to do. It's the worst kind of.
How would you know what it's like to give a sincere compliment?
There. Now we're back to our level playing field.
For me, it just looks like sucking up to you.
I'll give him giving you a lot of sincere compliments, and they drive him crazy.
Yeah.
About his writing style, about what he's pulled off here.
I have
blog
no comments about this accusation.
I do. It's accurate.
Compliments go one way. Compliments can't go up. I can't compliment my boss. That'd be like sucking up.
Like sucking up. It'd be exactly
you could
sucking
try.
Up.
Like once would be nice.
At least give it a shot, Seth, is what he's saying.
I'll think of something.
All right. I completely disagree with this notion. But we
they can
I stand
go down
by it.
Too, sir.
It has always been a pleasure to be on your show. As weird as it's always been a little weird.
A little more than a little weird.
Yeah,
this was tame, relatively.
I was not called Dave 4 times in a row. That's something.
I never did that 4 times in a row.
We can check the tape.
See, I guess this is the lack of sucking up he's talking about.
I was very
this
tired.
This is exactly it.
I kill my sleep schedule for you people, and this is what the thanks I get.
This is the thanks you get.
Yeah.
No one knows. We mess this place up faster than it can clean it up.
Yeah.
We got to beat Ohio State.
Yes, we do.
Here's a segue.
All right. We're going to take one
more
break.
All right, guys.
Come back with a gimmicky top five.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper. I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan! Go Blue!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESUREELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Back to MGO Radio, Dolphin Point.
11.
Zither?
Yeah. 11, Zither.
We are live at the Bow Store on Main Street. Come down here for some Black Friday deals, 30% off everything.
And some beer.
I don't actually know if that's true.
It's true.
It's true.
It's true. And there's a rack out there, too, that you got even more off. But there's also beer. Come have some of my beer.
Yes, the one beer. The one ice house.
This is my this is my tradition, sir.
To buy one 12-ounce ice house beer?
Yes. The last year was a growler from Slippery Rock.
Oh. You may have heard Nick Hopwood, who's on the thing now. How you doing, Nick?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, he's of Peak Wealth Management, who, of course, is one of our large sponsors. If you were in the market for a financial advisor, why would you be in that market? Like, what needs do you serve?
Well, our business model basically has, you know, two options. One, you're looking for financial planning. You don't know, maybe it's halftime of your career, you don't know what the score is.
Right.
You need to figure out if you're on path to reach that goal, and if you're not, what changes do you need to make? So I'm the guy who coaches you and helps you make those decisions. Or you're looking for help with investment advice, and we can help you with that as well.
All right. So we have a gimmicky top five of bad takes from this off season. for Seth and I, at least two of them have to be our personal takes. Nick is a sponsor, so we're not going to do that to him.
I'm not on record anywhere. Yeah.
Right, and he also, like, there's not a whole lot of...
I had a surprisingly easy time finding my bad takes, too.
Well, there were a couple ones that stood out to me, so... Seth, you're number five.
Number five is coming. This comes directly from Hail the Victors this year, Craig Ross. Sorry, Craig, to call you out, but I was in the minority when Jim Harbaugh was hired, since I preferred Tom Herman.
Tom Herman's a good coach?
Not because Herman was or is a better coach, but because I am skeptical about the sustainability of pro-style offenses.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's not, I mean, he's kind of right about that, right? Like, they're moving away from.
Well,
I don't think that's that bad
his reason. No, his take is that he's skeptical of Jim Harbaugh working out because pro-style offenses are not going to last, and Jim's a pro-style guy.
I don't think that's the worst.
And that take, well, it's my number five.
All right.
And I had to call out Craig.
Nick, you're number five.
In no particular order. Okay.
Full Nick, disclosure. You're in no particular order.
I'm going to go with Patterson being one and done. I don't see that.
You don't see that happening?
No.
Well, that's kind
I'm
of...
I'm counting on him coming back next.
All right. Well, that's good. If that's a terrible take, then we got good news for next year.
Yeah. I want that to be a terrible take.
Yeah, I want it to be a terrible take. My number five is my own take, and this actually isn't quite an off-season take. It's after the Notre Dame game. I said Michigan should have hired a college spread expert. They did. His name is Ed Warner. So I just kind of overlooked that because, you know, Michigan has this first game against Notre Dame, and they're reading nobody, and they don't really have a quarterback run game, and it's just an ugly, sloppy game where they're not really integrating Shea Patterson very well at all. And I underestimated the influence Warner would have later. I do kind of feel like that was a come-to-Jesus moment. And Warner is like, hey, I can do this. I've been doing this for the last 10 years.
Right.
And some people kind of got on me because it's like, oh, well, Harbaugh has a big quarterback run game in his playbook. And it's kind of like,
He ran it in the NFL when the NFL hadn't really seen it yet.
Right. He ran it in the NFL when any zone read is like a 60-yard touchdown when you have Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
And it's a little bit different when there's a lot of games going on from the opposition. Seth, you're number four.
Kind of in the same vein. Again, from Hail the Victors, I said that, you know, Michigan will be able to pick up a stunt against Notre Dame, but Warner's not going to be able to rebuild a leg, hang 30 pounds of tissue on a teenager, or recruit an immediate answer to offensive tackle. It's going to be a while. James Hunt is going to take over midseason.
Yeah, I mean, that is a bad take. But in your defense, that's my number two. Nick, you're number four.
Not too excited here. I think that a lot of people picked Northwestern like fourth in the West.
Yes.
And they're top dog, so I'm going with Northwestern.
Yeah.
They're still kind of fourth in the West, even though they won it, though, right?
Yeah. Like they are the worst division champion since the origin of divisions,
right,
which go back a lot longer than the playoffs.
If you're looking at like fancy stats, yeah.
Yeah, but they're like in the 80s in S&P, not in the 40s.
I thought they were in the 50s.
Okay, fine. The 50s are still awful.
It's still awful.
Yeah.
I wonder how that would look if you looked at, you know, in conference versus just total, right?
Yeah. So, well, they lost all their non-conference games.
Exactly. Yeah.
So my number four is a take I had from the season preview. My second worst take from the season preview, which is the defensive tackles are going to be amazeballs. In my defense, I was counting on Aubrey Solomon kind of having a breakout year.
Right.
And for a lot of reasons unrelated to Aubrey Solomon's talent, that has not happened.
Right.
So, and I think we saw some flashes against Indiana where if he had been healthy all year, if he had been able to develop, you would see kind of that impact defensive tackle. But Brian Monet, kind of just a guy. Lawrence Marshall, kind of just a guy. Carlo Kemp, kind of just a guy. And then you have Dwumfor, who's not just a guy.
And that's higher on my list.
He's like he's like a really good pass rusher who can't play on rundown. So
right.
It's it, you know, the whole like Hurst thing. This is not just my take, though. This is like the take of everybody who saw a practice over the last 2 years going like, this guy's the new Mo Hurst. And it's a take of like Greg Madison, who's like, this guy is a bigger Mo Hurst. So it's a lot of people's takes, but also my take.
Yeah. That was my number three.
What's your number three?
That was Dwumfor. Oh. I wanted to take credit for it because I was saying it too, but really I was just, you know, saying it because everyone else was saying it.
Well, and there was a long period of Dwumfor hype well before it needed to start, and I always feel like that's usually a pretty good sign because they're talking about Dwumfor when they have Mo Hurst for another year, and it's like nobody needs to hear about the backup defensive tackle.
I think, like, if there people are wondering what's going to happen after Mo Hurst, you can answer that question by, oh, this guy's really good. This guy's a Mo Hurst, but big.
Yeah.
And I bought it. You bought it. We all bought it.
You can see why.
Yeah. Yeah, but Madison knows when a guy is not hacking it, and would have known when they were saying those things.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I think happened is that Michigan's offensive line was so bad and so disorganized
that
in practice just, a lot of people would have looked like Mo Hurst, and he's the guy with the best first step, but he can't hold up when he actually gets hit.
Right. I mean, I in the future he'll be fine. And Mo Hurst was a little bit wild when he was a young player too.
In a different way.
Yeah.
Nick, you're number three.
Just like Northwestern was fourth in the West, Michigan was picked by a lot of folks to be fourth in the East behind Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State. So I think that's terrible.
Yeah, that's actually related to my number three, which is Michigan's schedule is brutal, which it didn't really turn out to be that case because Michigan State has no offense. Wisconsin's defense fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
Nebraska, they're a much better team than their record, I think, but they are 4-8. And then Penn State couldn't weather the loss of Joe Moorhead and Saquon Barkley. So you're looking at these teams, and, you know, Penn State's 12th in the college football playoff rankings.
Really?
Yeah, they are.
I mean, we were wobbly on them in the preseason, I remember.
So Michigan came into these games, and, you know, they've dominated, and they look like a top-tier playoff contender. But, like, there's only one really good team in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And it's Michigan.
Yep.
And even, like, this coming game against Ohio State, I kind of think, like, Ohio State has been a pretty massive disappointment, despite the fact that they're 10-1. So it just feels like a totally...
On that point, how can you reconcile 10-1 as a complete disappointment, right?
Well, I mean, it's not a complete disappointment, obviously.
But if you listen to the fan base...
Well, I mean, we were talking this... They haven't experienced any adversity in 15 years, really.
Yeah, a kid going to Ohio State right now probably thinks that a year with Luke Fickell is like the worst thing that can happen in the world.
Yeah. Which was pretty bad.
they were still within like three or four in the Big House, though.
They were.
Yeah.
Six, I think, was
a few inches as well.
Yeah, that overthrow, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is funny because, I mean, they could be 8-4 really, really easily. Like, and then it's just like... Everything's on fire.
They very well. I mean, yeah. I said it, I'm going to say it again. Two coin flip games and two games that were like they were 60% to win.
Yeah.
If you get all four of those wins, you are incredibly, incredibly lucky.
Mm-hmm. Seth, your number two.
My number two is Brian Lewerke's Heisman campaign.
Was that?
No,
that
was not
you.
Mine. Okay. That wasn't mine. No. But that was. I told you. Know, I'm surrounded by Spartans in my West Bloomfield home and people and my family and whatnot. I got into Michigan and everyone around me didn't. I think
same story here.
Yeah, Nick.
And that's why my number two was Lewerke for Heisman.
I didn't hear any of this.
You're in a very blue bubble over
here. I'm insulated from all this Michigan State delusion.
Oh, it was all over Detroit, like I don't want to say Detroit radio because I don't listen to Detroit radio, but I listen to people who listen to Detroit radio, and I'm sure that they were getting – Michigan State was returning all of their players.
They returned like 19 starters from a team that should have been like 7-5 last year.
Exactly, and they should have been 7-5 this year too, and they should have been 7-5 the year before, but they're just very luck-oriented, that team. But Lewerke is not luck-oriented. He's just not good.
Well, he probably has like a torn labrum or something, right? Like –
he was not good before that.
That's
either.
True.
Yeah.
Related to this is that Graham Couch was like writing like some column or something, and one of his like, okay, it's going to be fine. Everybody should be happy. Things is quarterback is set until 2021 because Rocky Lombardi had like, and I was like, I went and I looked at his stats and he was completely less than half of his passes. And I'm like, what about Rocky Lombardi? Like overthrowing guys by 5 yards makes you think that you've got the next guy.
Because he looked really good against Purdue.
Everyone always wants the backup quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, my brother is Spartan. Shout out to Mark. He was one of these guys saying that, you know, if they take Lewerke out, they win against Ohio State kind of thing. Why do they put Lewerke back in? What is he thinking?
Rocky was not good at all against Ohio State.
I agree.
He was terrible.
He had one long run. That's it.
Yeah. I mean,
that was hilarious, though.
His name is Rocky Lombardi. I will give him that. That is the most football name I've ever heard in my life.
So my number two, we already had next number two because it was the same assess, is that offensive tackle will doom us. I gave the position a one in my preview, and that was looking optimistic after Notre Dame. But John Runyon and Juwan Bushel-Beatty completed, I think, the greatest in-season turnarounds in Michigan football history.
Yes.
Like there have been guys who like emerged later.
There was like the Rudakening, and even that's not – the level, because he was not coming from like, oh god, this is awful. He was coming from, once he gets the hang of it, he'll be fine.
He wasn't great though.
I wasn't walking out of the Utah game saying this guy can't play quarterback.
Yeah. And so, I mean, all credit to both those guys, credit to Ed Warner, credit to Jim Harbaugh for hiring Ed Warner, but like, this is a happy bad take, obviously. Because my offensive line preview went to the backups and it's like, there's a 50% chance these guys are going to be starting by mid-year.
Yep.
And boy, did I think that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it didn't. So, good on those guys.
Yep.
Seth, you're number one.
Harbaugh needs to win this year. He's going to wear out his welcome.
That sounds like someone you specifically know.
It's a conglomeration.
That's the Sparty aura around your home.
Oh, not just the the Spartans and Penn State fans and Ohio State fans. Whenever they ask, they're like, "Oh, so is Harbaugh kind of get great on you guys?" Like no Michigan fan going into the season was like, "I'm so tired of Harbaugh." Well, other than the type
Sean Errol Martin,
right
on Twitter,
right. But I think Harbaugh is doing just fine here, and I think that it's very quiet from all the people who are asking me early in the season, like, how many games does Harbaugh have to win to keep his job this year?
That just sounds like someone you know.
That's how I read it when I see it on Twitter.
Is that like an aunt of yours?
No.
No comment?
No.
I'm just going to assume that it is. Nick, you're number one.
So after the Notre Dame loss, it's like really late. We had to wait like 45 minutes in line to catch the bus for a one-mile bus ride back to the car. Anyway, we should have just walked. Sitting next to this old man on the bus, and he says just this, Seth, when are you going to be done with Harbaugh, so to speak? And I'm like, no, there's nothing wrong with him. He's staying. But I realized at that moment that we just lost four straight, right? Wisconsin,
yep.
Ohio State, South Carolina, and Notre Dame. But, yeah, my number one is Harbaugh's only stayed anywhere 4 years. You know, this is his last year kind of thing, and I don't see it. I take him at his word when he says, this is it. You know, I want to be here for 20 years, like Bo.
Well, he doesn't look like Urban Meyer on the sideline. He looks like he's having fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he moved his dad into a house across the street. He's like, his kids are going to the specific school that he was talking about when he lived in California, that he wishes the schools were like that. So, I mean, maybe one day he wants to leave and go back to the NFL, but I don't think so. I think he's going to retire here.
Yeah. I think he's going to die. Like in 30 years.
When?
Coaches don't really die. They just kind of like go back to the ether.
Now, he's literally said that his goal is to coach and then die.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going to happen. Anyway. So minor.
Preferably not tomorrow.
That was unnecessarily morbid, and I apologize. But my number one is that Harbaugh can't win big games.
Ah.
Which was based on some incredibly stupid stuff. It was based on the punt against Michigan State. It was based on the John O'Korn experience.
Right,
it was,
where he just out-coached Urban Meyer in every single facet right. of football except for recruiting third-string quarterbacks.
And it was based on, you know, one inch in Columbus 2 years ago. In games where Michigan felt like the more organized and more prepared team. Like, there was never any justification for Harbaugh can't win big games. It's that bad luck happens to everybody. I mean, how many big games did he win in the NFL? How many big games did he win at Stanford? How many big games did he win at Michigan? Well, not enough at first, but there are reasons for that that are right in front of your face. And unless you're like a radio guy who's just like...
Is that someone you know?
It might be.
You have an aunt who just goes around...
I have no comment on this matter anymore. All right, Nick Hopwood, you got a website?
Yes, sir. PeakWM, like wealthmanagement.com. And if you put in a / mgoblog, there's a special landing page for all of our fans.
So, you got to hook me up with like a SEP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we do our own little interview podcast, we can talk a lot about that kind of stuff.
Because, like, you're talking about, like, oh, you're midway for your career and you don't really know what the score is. And I'm like, sounds familiar. So.
It's good to know what the score is.
Yeah. All right, Nick Hopwood, everybody.
Yeah, you have a podcast, too.
Oh, yes, sir. It's called Finding True Wealth. So the URL for that is findingtruewealth.podbean.com. I kind of copied you guys with yours. Or you can also listen up on our blog as well, peakwm.com/blog.
All right.
Yep.
You have a score prediction?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go with low scoring.
Okay.
16-10. Surprisingly 16-10. Low. Yeah. Think 2002, 14-9 kind of thing. They're going to rise to the occasion. I know all the X and the O's, but I think that they're going to step it up.
All right.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah. Speaking
what did
of
I
old,
say? I said 40-27. That's what I said.
I'm going 31-23, and Higdon goes for 3-1-3.
Yeah. Duca.
Who's got it better than us?